Well, thank you for joining us today on the Pastor's Roundtable from Albertville First Baptist Church. We are excited to have a special guest with us today, Dr. Chet Roden, who is the pastor of Bel Air Baptist Church in Boaz. Chet, welcome.
Good to be here, Chris. Thank you for having me.
I'm excited. I tell you, over the last 10 to 12 weeks, we have interviewed usually two pastors at a time, and I chose this week to just have you alone because I have so many questions for you. So
I hope I have enough answers for
It'll be great. It'll be great. So looking forward to that. Before we dive into the things that he is going to discuss and we're going to discuss together, let me just remind people a little bit about how you can find Albertville First Baptist Church and also how you can find the church where Chet pastors, Bel Air Baptist Church. So let me start with Albertville First Baptist. We have an online worship experience on Sundays at 10:15 a.m. You can find us in a couple of different locations. You can search and find us through Facebook Live. It's easy to find us there, or through our website, albertvillefbc.church. Both of those work, and either one, it's up to you. If you'd like to watch and participate, that's great. If you would prefer to be in person, we would love to have you visit with us. We are offering two services right now. One is at 8:30 a.m., that service is designed for people who might be a little more vulnerable to COVID-19 or folks who have health reasons that they need to be more cautious. And so at the 8:30 a.m. service, we are asking that everyone who attends wears a mask as they enter and exit. That's a requirement for that service only. Now, once you're seated, we allow folks to take those off if they need to while they're seated in the worship center. But for that service, we do have that. Then at 10:15 a.m., which is our normal time for worship all throughout a normal year, we have the identical worship service. But in that service, the face masks are optional. But we encourage people to come and participate. Now, right now, we do not have any children's programming or activities still. Our plan is to begin to ramp back into those slowly starting 1st of July. We'll talk more about that in the weeks to come. But we do offer every Wednesday evening an online worship experience for children called I Worship Kids Style. It's Wednesday nights at 6 o'clock, and you can find us through our church website, and we also publicize that and blast it through Facebook. So just know that there'll be ways you can do that, and we invite anyone who has children to participate in that. It's anywhere from 20 minutes to 30 minutes, a special time. There's usually music. There's interactive activities, crafts, take-home work. It's just a great time that our children's minister and usually one other volunteer put together each week. So that's Wednesdays at 6 p.m. And then one last thing I want to say. If you happen to be listening today because you do not physically feel like you can be at church yet in person, but you also maybe don't have internet access or you don't have a tablet, a device, something, even if you have the internet that will stream a worship service. And so this is the way you're getting all of your worship. Well, we have something that we would like to offer for you, and that is this, a toll-free phone number I'm just about to give you if you want to write it down. And you can call this number at 10:15 a.m., and you can listen to our service live. So you just call in and listen to the entire thing just as it's being presented. So that phone number is toll-free, 1-855-539-6018. 1-855-539-6018. Now, Chet, would you take a moment and tell us about Bel Air Baptist? Tell people, first of all, where it is, what time you meet, and are you guys still doing Facebook Live, and what's going on there?
We started doing Facebook Live when the pandemic, first grabbed us, and we had to stay at home. So we started doing Facebook Live, and we were amazed at the results that we had. It was incredible. You know, we're a small congregation, and the numbers of people we had watching were amazing. So we're even though we've started back a meeting on Sunday mornings, we're still doing Facebook Live. We only do Sunday morning services right now. Because we don't want to expose people, the opportunities and stuff when we can do Wednesday nights and do a Bible study on Facebook. So we do Sunday morning worship at 11 o'clock, and then we do Wednesday night, and I post a study. We've been doing studies on eternal states, heaven and hell, and so we do that on Wednesday nights right now.
Well, so to let folks know that might not know where Bel Air Baptist is, give us your location.
Yes, on Bel Air Street, and it's in Boaz. It's on the north side of Boaz, just off 205. It's not, but about a block off 205.
Right.
Coming out of Boaz. I don't know the roads very well, Chris, to be honest with you. I've just traveled them so much, sure. I never even look
at
the roads.
It's not hard to find when someone's looking for it. Right.
It's one block off of Highway 205. You can actually see it from 205. And when you're coming out of Boaz, maybe a quarter of a mile, less than half a mile, you'll turn left and cross railroad tracks. You see our church there. It's near, most people know where Mount Vernon Homes are.
Correct.
Is located. And so it's just on the edge of that on Bel Air Street.
Now, you've not been there very long. How long have you been serving as pastor?
I started as pastor December the 1st. I think it was December 1st. It was the first Sunday. If not, it was the first Sunday in December.
So, and so you were able to get 3 months in before you had to become a televangelist and go online.
That's exactly right, before I became a social media light.
There you go. So it's been something new for all of us to learn, hasn't it? So, I am, for those who are listening, I think I said it earlier, I'm really excited. Chet serves as a pastor. He is also a full-time professor and has really specialized in a few different areas. And so as we get into all that, would you take a little time to start with, though? I always ask each pastor to share their story of how they came to Christ.
Right.
So can you talk about your story of how you came to Christ and then your call to ministry?
Sure. I grew up in, the closest little town was Sardis
right.
City, and when I'm living away and people say where are you from, I say Boaz, Alabama.
Sure.
But that's really not true. We're about 12 miles from Boaz,
right,
where we live, or 10, something like that. It's a good little ways, but we live out in the country, out in the Whitesboro community, to be more specific, Happy Hill community on
Cox
Gap
Road. You're getting real specific.
That's right. And I grew up there, went to church at Whitesboro Baptist Church. That was
right.
My family's church and my church. And so I went there until I was about 22, something like that. But when I was, my family is a huge family. I'm from part of the Hallmark family out there. And my mother was the baby daughter of 12 kids.
Wow.
And I am the baby boy of 30-something grandkids. My mama had 34, 33, something like that.
Wow.
Grandkids, and I'm the baby boy of all of them. And so I actually live now on Hallmark Road because there's so many. So that's where I grew up. That's where I was. And so they were all godly people. My elders, they went to church. My mom went to church, and most of my family went to church. I grew up in church, and so I grew up in church as well. And when I was about 11 years old, we had revival, and the evangelist gave an invitation, altar call, if you will, and I felt like I needed to be saved, and I went down and got saved at the age of 11. And from that point, I was wishy-washy, coming up in teenage years, you just kind of get wild, whatever. And I never was just totally wild. I wasn't a dope head or an alcoholic or nothing like that. But listen, I didn't follow the Lord either.
Right.
I mean, sin's sin. It doesn't matter if it's alcoholism or drug addiction or whatever. Sin's sin, right? So, but then when I was about 17, I was still in high school, about to enter my senior year, I felt like God was calling me to preach, and I didn't want to do it. I'll be totally honest with you. I didn't want to do it. I fought it for about a year and a half. I didn't think I could live my athletic life and my music life. I love bluegrass music.
Right.
I was trying to do a career in bluegrass music. That was my aspiration and goal, and so.
So this little sidebar, what all do you play?
Well, my main instrument is banjo.
Right.
I'm a banjo player, and then I can play about anything with strings on it a little bit, but I play guitar, rhythm guitar a lot. I can play bass guitar, with some proficiency.
As a musician, and I'm going to get right back, I promise, but as a musician, I can appreciate, a lot of people do not realize that playing, someone who plays bluegrass music well, they mm-hmm. are really good musicians.
Yes, they are.
That is it's technical, and it's not as easy as a number of other styles of music.
No, it's not. And people think because when the singer sings, often it's through their nose or whatever, you know, that high, lonesome sound. But it is quite technical. And if you play anything else and you try bluegrass, you'll find out pretty quickly it takes a special groove.
Oh, yes.
A special technique and special expertise.
Well, that's awesome. So back to you wanted a mm-hmm. career in bluegrass.
Yeah, that's kind of what, you know, that was my mind. I want to be a musician either in, and I was playing with some gospel groups around here too, and that sort of thing. And that's what I wanted. But the Lord had different intentions. And when I was 18, after I graduated high school, that following summer, I surrendered to the call of ministry. And I didn't know what that meant, to be totally honest with you. I wasn't sure where it was going to lead. But anyway, for about 10 years, Chris, I kind of fumbled around, stumbled around, doing itinerant gigs, you know, here and there. I say gigs, sermons, teaching, that sort of thing around. And did that for about 10 years, I guess. Mm. And the whole time of the last 5 years, I had realized that, man, this is not working. I was working at Wagner Brake Company during that time. I was trying to sing on the weekends, do ministry, and go to church. And we had transferred our membership from Whitesboro Baptist to Sardis Baptist Church during that time, as God had led us to do. And Brother Max Roden, mm-hmm. you probably know Max.
Great man.
Yeah, he became my mentor and helper, and mm-hmm. he encouraged us to think about studying for the ministry, studying and going to school. And my best friend, Steve Lacey, and he and his wife, Penny Lacey. Now, Penny is Max's daughter, right? And so through them, anyway, they were a big help, big support, and we finally, some other folks at Sardis Baptist had told us about Baptist College of Florida, which is in Graceville, Florida. Went there and finished my bachelor's degree.
So this was like in your mid-20s?
Yeah, I was 20. No, I was 28, Chris.
Okay.
I was in late 20s by that time. And so we quit our jobs at Wagner. I quit my job at Wagner. My wife was a dental hygienist.
Right.
And we quit our jobs, moved to Florida, spent 2 years there. Finishing up, then went to Wake Forest, North Carolina, where Southeastern Seminary is.
Right.
It's one of the six seminaries,
oh, yes.
you know, the Southern Baptist Convention. Went there, and somewhere in that process between my senior year in college or so, I felt like God wanted me to get a PhD. Now, listen, I'm a bumpkin. I know that. I'm not the smartest person in the world, but I just felt like God wanted to do that. And I made God a promise. I said, God, if you'll open the doors and you'll give me the grades and you'll give me the money, you know, I'll work my part. I'll work hard at it, and I'll do my part. But if you know, you'll have to supply the money and open the doors, I'll go as far as you'll let me go.
Right.
And every time I came to a transition, I had all the grades needed. I had all the money I needed, and God opened every door.
Wow.
And so I ended up with a PhD in Old Testament and archaeology.
Now, did that come from Southwestern, or did that where?
Southeastern.
Southeastern for your master's and your PhD,
yes,
both?
Yes, I stayed there. I got my master's and PhD there.
Well, that's amazing when you think you went from working at Wagner and finally taking the step to move forward to finish education. Now, in that time, then once you received your PhD, you didn't start teaching right away. Is that correct? You pastored for a while?
No, I was pastoring the whole time in between there. I pastored a church in Virginia during my PhD. This is during my PhD only.
Right.
When I was getting my master's, I pastored a local church there near Wake Forest. When I was getting my PhD, I pastored full-time in Virginia and just traveled one day a week to school and came back and did my work and that sort of thing. Then came back to Alabama as I was finishing up my PhD and pastored at Southside Baptist in Talladega for 8 years.
So just curious, for your PhD, what was the subject of your dissertation?
My dissertation.
Right.
Yeah, my dissertation was archaeological models used in Israel since 1970. And 1970 was a big, between 70 and 74 was a watershed time of archaeology when a lot of the giants died, actually.
Right.
And all the heroes of quote-unquote biblical archaeology died during that time. And that was a huge transition. And so I'm just kind of noted that and noted, and then did a big survey of the digs that were going on, had been going on and started and ended since 1970.
Well, see, and that's for the average person listening. They're familiar, maybe as if the average believer that's listening is familiar with a couple of some of the major finds in archaeology in the Christian world, but probably would have no idea the just the thousands and thousands of important discoveries and finds that have come along the way over the years and how important they are. Did you have an opportunity, have you had an opportunity to actually lead some digs yourself and to go do some archaeology?
Yeah, I've never been the lead archaeologist, but I've been the key player in the last several years. One of the key players, there's bunches. It's always a team effort,
right,
okay?
Sure.
And when I say my digs, I don't mean that I own them. It means that I participated.
Sure.
But I was area supervisor, have been area supervisor for the last several years at Tel Gezer, and then we ended that dig, we finished there, and now we're at a new dig started last year, full excavation, called Tel Hadid, H-A-D-I-D. And those cities, both of those cities at different times, guarded the road that goes today from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. If anybody's ever been there, you get a map, you can see. The major international highway ran down the sea line, the coastline there. It's called the Via Maris. And that's been an international roadway for millennia. And so the road from Tel Aviv, there was a major branch there, and it ran into the inner part of the country, the inner part of the country, to Jerusalem. And early on, Gezer, it was time of Solomon and even time of Abraham.
Right.
At time of Abraham, Gezer was huge. It was very influential. From Gezer, you can see the Via Maris. You can see that coastal highway. And it guarded that and that entrance into Jerusalem, into the inner part of the country. And then as it began to wane, governmentally, politically, socially, Gezer started waning by the time of the, I don't know, 5th, 6th century B.C. It had by that time lost most of its power. All of its influence, and that influence changed and moved up to north on the other side of the road. Basically, it's about, I think, 3 or 4 miles north, but on the other side of the road, Tel Hadid became that influential city, that guardian of the Via Maris and the inner, the road going into Jerusalem. And so it's interesting that I've been able the last decade to dig at Gezer and at Tel Hadid, which these cities guarded that way into Jerusalem, you know, at just different time periods.
So just to dig down this, no pun intended, a little bit further, I'll give you my, you know, I took biblical archaeology when I was a student at Samford University, and I've seen Raiders of the Lost Ark, and I have watched some documentaries, but I'm assuming that what it's really like is nothing like that.
No.
Can you talk about, just because I think it's interesting, and I hope folks who are listening will find it that way as well, what a normal day looks like when you're on a dig, just real quickly, and then secondly, from the two sites that you have been active with the last decade, the most significant find in your eyes from that?
Well, the day is difficult. It's hot. It's hard. It's hot there. The weather temperatures are not quite as extreme as here in Alabama in August. You know, August you can get up in the upper 90s to 100, and the humidity is just extreme. There, it's kind of like it is in mid-June. You know, you get temperatures in the mid-90s typically. And now there'll be some days like us that will hit 100 there. The wind typically starts blowing about 9, 10, 11 o'clock, something like that in the mornings. But you got to understand, we get up at 4 a.m. We're on the dig site somewhere around 5, 5:30, something like that. Some digs is 6 o'clock, but by 6 o'clock, sun's done been up for a while there, you can see. So we get up early to beat the heat. That's the reason. And we dig until about 2 o'clock, 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And then we come back, and the place wherever we're staying, we get cleaned up and that sort of thing, and eat a hot meal. And we rest in the afternoon, wash clothes. You wash clothes in a mop bucket, literally.
Wow.
You wash in a mop bucket, and then you have what's called pottery reading, where we take the pottery from the day before and analyze it and look at it, sit around the table and talk about it. And then we have dinner, and by 8 o'clock, you're about ready to go to bed, you know, because it's such a early day.
So it's maybe not so glamorous. It's hard work.
It's not glamorous a bit. Now, it's fun to talk about your fines later on, but the process of getting to those fines it's a pretty arduous task. You know, it's a lot of work. But the thing is, the way they do archaeology is they divide up the tasks. There are so many different tasks that no matter how young or how old, how energetic, how hard you want to work, how little you want to work, they can find a job
for you. There's a way for you to do
it. Absolutely is. And so, you know, somebody's got to log all the pottery buckets and log all that. Somebody's got to wash the pottery. Somebody's got to help with the food. Somebody's got to, there's a job that you can be a part in these digs.
So what about what you would say, and again, I know this would be subjective, but one of the greatest finds that you've been able to be a part of?
Well, at Tel Gezer, I've dug at some massive cities. You should look up, everyone should look up. Hatzor is the first one, Joshua chapter 11. It was the head of all those kingdoms, massive. Wow. I dug some seasons there and had some great finds come from that dig. Gezer is another massive city, a lot of good digs. We dug in what's called the water system there. Right. There was a water tunnel that goes down 170 feet or something like that right now.
Wow.
And it's got steps all the way down, and we dug, the group that I'm with dug that thing out by hand, one shovel at a time into the industrial basket. So just the water system itself is a massive accomplishment.
Sure.
For me, I worked outside, just outside the water tunnel. There was a massive building there. We first thought it might be a barracks. We first thought it might be an outdoor complex. It's some sort of outdoor complex that fed people because there's a lot of stoves found there. And in that area there, I and my team, Area C team, we found a bowl. It was tucked up under a wall. We'd been finding pottery for an entire 2 weeks, I guess, digging it up. And it took us 2 or 3 more days to get down about 3 feet, 2 feet, something like that, under all this pottery, ash. You could tell it was been a big destruction there, big fire because of all the ash. And underneath there, we found a jar turned upside down, and it was broken. And inside it was this melded together, you know, corroded together mess. And we pulled it up, and as soon as the young lady who was digging it was very nervous. She did a great job. Her name is Savannah Fredrickson, and Savannah, I was over her shoulder, and I said, "Okay, Savannah, it's time to pull it out." Now she's, "I'm not pulling it out. I'm too nervous." And she just jumped up. I mean, honestly, she just got us. "I'm not touching it." So I got down and I picked the thing up, and then when I turned it over, I saw gold on it.
Wow.
And what it turned out to be, Chris, this whole melded stuff was a group of silver jewelry, and this silver jewelry had kind of just corroded together. They had put a put it in a cloth, and we actually found some threads from the cloth.
Wow.
It was all silver. I don't know how many items. There was a nice silver pendant there that was a melding, a weld. They had actually welded together a crescent moon shape and a sun disc. And it looked, those are Canaanite deity symbols.
Wow.
But they had melded it together to look more like an Egyptian headdress worn by the goddess Hathor in their hieroglyphs. And so Gezer, it was this melding pot where they took Canaanite culture and melded it together to make it look, you know, look like Egypt. And the gold was actually a scarab. A scarab is a stone that's got writing on one side, but it was encased in gold. And they would wear it like a ring because it worn like a ring. They put gold around it and it wear it around the ring. And then when they signed the document, so they flip it over and embossed, put it in clay, soft clay. And so, yeah, we found that it took us about 6 months before we could make it public. We found it in June. It didn't come out in public till November 14th. I think it's 2016. You can look it up. But if someone wants to look that cash up, it's called the Silver Hoard of Gezer. If you put silver, cash, and then Gezer, G-E-Z-E-R, you can find it.
So it's got to be amazing when you're holding that and you're thinking, this belonged to someone. What's their story?
Yeah,
what it shows about society, what it shows about the culture.
Well, it was somebody important because it was right beside the water tunnel, and it's also right beside the entrance to the city gate. Now, this city gate dates back to the time of Abraham. Okay, it was a covered gate, like, and there was three of those in Israel that we know of.
Right.
One was in Tel Dan. There's one from the same exact time frame, and then there's one in Ashkelon, which is in the south, and Gezer is in about the middle of the country, southern middle section of the country, and so it dates about the time of Abraham, like 1700s or something
BC. Well, that is amazing.
That pottery came from that time, and it was a foundation deposit stuck in under the foundation to receive or something like that. That's what we're thinking, that it might have been put place there to get the blessings of the gods, the goddess or whatever there. And you know, if you had silver and gold back in those days, you know, you had it's just like today, it was expensive stuff, and so you had to be of some wealth or power to have that. So somebody, whoever lived in that building during that time, had some had some power, some money.
And so just one last question about that, and we'll move on from this subject. So when you find like that, where does that end up?
In the Israel Museum or in the Antiquities Authority, they have...
It all belongs to them, is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yeah, you can't bring anything home unless you're given permission by the dig directors.
Right.
And then it's only pottery shards that have been documented and tossed away, not any kind of whole things, you know. There's some shops in town in Jerusalem that sell antiquities from digs, and they have license to, because they've had it. These have been in collections since prior to the 1970s or something. But no, you don't take stuff home. You get in trouble.
So are part of these digs, have they been associated with your time? You also, we didn't talk about this when I said you are a professor now. You're a professor at Liberty University.
Yeah,
How long have you been connected to Liberty?
When I finished my dissertation in 2006, December. And I saw a job opening for online professors in 2007, February, so 2 months later after I got my dissertation.
Which, let's just take a second and say, we think online professors now, nobody thinks that big of a thing. But that, even in 2007, that was ahead of the curve.
Way ahead of the curve. And very few people did online. As a matter of fact, a lot of schools were writing articles about the perils of online education.
Right.
And it was, looking back, you think how foolish that was.
Right.
Nobody had vision. They were so stuck in the traditions of the past that they couldn't see. But Chris, I would put the I've designed several degrees. I've designed a Master of Arts in Biblical Studies. I've designed courses, and I'd put those courses up against any residential course anywhere. I'm talking Ivy League schools, wherever. I'd put those courses up against it.
And the beautiful thing about online learning now, when it can be at a reputable institution and and you're getting a good rigorous course and training and professors that know their stuff, is that it allows people who would have no other way to leave where they were to go and get the training. It allows of any walk of life, and people who are bivocational pastors to be able to get. It's a wonderful thing. Great tool.
Chris.
Glad that we have it.
It is. And Liberty called me back pretty quickly after I applied for that post. And at the time, they had some like 30-something professors at the seminary. This is when it was called the seminary. And so I started I taught online for 2 years, and they called me and said, hey, we like your work. We need some people here. Why don't you come up and be full-time residential? So I did. I came up and became a chair of the department, Biblical Studies Department, and some Practical Studies Department. I did oversaw that. And ultimately, we ended up having in the seminary close to 300 professors just in the seminary, just in the master's level. Now, we're not talking about any of the undergrad of Liberty.
Sure.
And in its heyday, in its peak, and I think 2014, 2015, Liberty had something like 106,000 students, including 13,000 residential students.
Sure, sure.
So we were there, and so I did residential and online, and then Liberty made several cuts last year. They're still making cuts. The last 3 years, they've cut departments, and my administrative, since I was administrator, there were six positions, and they cut those positions, and so now I'm back in Alabama.
But you're still teaching for Liberty.
I'm teaching online.
Still overseeing
my residential duties, were cut, the administrative duties. But, hey, since I can, teach online, I'm back near family.
Well, and that's wonderful. And that's also allowed you to come back and then to be able to take on and pastor at Bel Air. And we're so thankful. I know that I personally, along with a lot of other people, prayed for a number of months for God to send someone to pastor and help that church to restart and to grow. And so, you know, God answered our prayers, and we're thankful for that.
That's right.
So now, to shift gears just a little bit, also something that I know that has been important to you is the area of apologetics. And you're actually working on you're designing a course right now for that. Is that correct?
I am.
Tell us about that
and,
a little bit.
Well, apologetics is one of those fields that has...
I'm sorry. First of all, there will be people listening who do not know what we mean by that. Would you explain what apologetics is?
Apologetics is just learning how to defend the faith.
Yes.
It's a, giving a defense for your faith. And Paul encourages us that we need to be able to do that and show ourselves... show ourselves worthy and to defend our faith and to explain our faith.
Yes.
Basically, when I say defend, it's explain your faith in light of a lot of obstacles such as criticism, such as modern science and those sorts of things. So apologetics is basically teaching people about the Bible, about the key areas where the Bible and Christianity are being criticized, and teach them how to rationally explain and to scientifically explain and how to biblically explain. And so when you do apologetics, you can't just always lean on the Bible, because some people don't even think the Bible is accurate, even at a human level, let alone a spiritual level. So you have to start talking to people where they are. And that's what we try to do in apologetics, is design reading, design courses, design thinking and assignments, so that people, when they get finished, when they hear these criticisms, they have an answer to say, hey, no, that's not just right, or here's the truth as we see it, here's where we stand on those things. And over the last 10 years or so, 15 years, it's really become a hot a subject area. And a lot of schools are just now getting on board with having apologetics programs. And I was able to be part of Liberty's program as we started designing that. One of my close buddies is the PhD director at Liberty. When they did, they have a PhD in apologetics and theology. And so I got to be, you know, close to all that. Some great apologists and theologians I got to be around. And so that was fun. And I got to design, Old Testament apologetics that's being taught at Liberty in the master's program.
Well, and at the time of this airing, we just saw last week celebration of life for just, a, in my mind, a great hero of the faith who passed away in the area of apologetics, Ravi Zacharias.
That's right.
And if there's anyone listening who says, I don't know who Ravi Zacharias is, well, you need to
agree.
When this is over, hop on the computer and just Google and go look at some YouTube videos.
Yes.
And, powerful.
Yeah, his first name is Ravi, R-A-V-I, and if you put Ravi Z, it'll
come
up.
You got it.
He's an amazing speaker.
I'll tell you, something I did not know that blew me away. I've loved his teaching, but to hear, I believe it was his brother speak at his funeral. I just caught a few minutes of it, but he was sharing that Ravi had a failed suicide attempt at the age of 17.
Yes, that's right.
And that is then how his mother led him to the Lord after that. It was just amazing to me to think he had been in a place, he was so desperate that it seemed like there was no hope in life. But yet through that, now to see then once he came to know the Lord, what the grace of the Lord can do in someone's life. And then he became one of the most well-known critical thinkers of the faith, who did an incredible job. And his desire was truly just to see people come to Christ.
That's exactly right.
It was powerful to think. Yeah. And that's just a reminder to me, honestly, that, you know, people say, wow, someone that did such great things and rose to such prominent place. He was a guy who tried to commit suicide at one point. Can I say to you, whatever's going on in your life, whatever circumstance you find yourself, whatever your past has been, do not let your past define what God wants to do with your future.
Amen.
You know, it may be a platform for part of that and a foundation for it, but in all reality, God in his grace can do whatever he wants. We see that in all of our lives, in yours, in mine.
Oh, absolutely.
Without a doubt. So this may not be possible in just a few short minutes, but when it comes to apologetics, is there, in your mind, is there, it may be multiple ones, but is there one particular subject or idea or truth that you believe every believer ought to know how to speak about and defend? Is there, if you had to narrow it down to one that you think they need to know what they know, about this, and not just know it because their mama and the grandmama told them, but know it. Can you think of one subject that might be?
Yeah, of course, the resurrection of Jesus is, is paramount, but people don't realize that the documentation about the resurrected person called, we call Jesus, the Messiah, the Christ. The documentation for that resurrection is amazing. Typically, if we have one document that says something about the past, we're happy.
Right.
But there are so many evidences about the resurrection that people, a friend of mine, professor at Liberty, Dr. Habermas, H-A-B-E-R-M-A-S, right. Habermas, he made a, has made a career out of talking about these evidences for the resurrection. He went to Michigan State, which is not a a hotbed of conservative evangelicalism, but he went there and studied. And he has taken all these arguments from critics, from atheists, from all these people, and used words, biblical text, historical documents that everybody agree on, and shown using their own words how true the resurrection is and how powerful it was documented. So believers need to understand that the resurrection of Jesus is not just some hoax.
That's right.
It was talked about, it was testified to, and even atheists have to admit that the evidence against their views about a resurrected person are weak at best.
I have quoted him and given him credit in a couple of messages over the past years, really, dealing with the proof of the resurrection, without a doubt. And to the believer that's listening, we're not saying that we have to defend the resurrection. Direction in the sense that
no need to prove it.
Yeah, that's right. But to those that don't know, all of this is about. We want, if you're listening and you are, you have some doubts, you're skeptical. The idea is we're not your enemy, and we don't think of you as the enemy. That
no,
we're trying to
no.
be. We're hoping that we can speak truth and show you some very real evidence that helps you see the truth of the resurrection.
Yes. Well, a lot of these things, criticism becomes myth, like, social legend,
right?
And that sort of thing. And they're not. We have a very logical position. We have a very rational position. We have a very strong position.
Yes.
And just because critics are loud doesn't mean they're right.
Right.
And so what we're trying to do is just say, hey, look, reconsider this from this perspective and take a look at it. The second thing would be the Bible and the validity, the veracity of the Bible is being, under fire for quite some time now. And that really started back in the 60s or so, 50s and 60s, maybe even earlier than that, but particularly, really it started in the late 1800s. But the in America, where it really became prominent and popular to diss the Bible was in the 60s and 70s. And since that time, it's just grown. And now people say, oh, the Old Testament, especially the Old Testament, that's just an ancient document that doesn't mean anything. But listen, we have some strong writers that tell us different. There's a book called The Bible Among the Myths.
Right.
And that's one of the best books. Oswalt is an author and one of the best books to explain the nature and character of the Bible. And it's not a myth. It's not a myth in any way you define it.
No.
Is it part of this ancient culture? Of course. It has to be part of that day and age. But it's totally different from, but yet still similar to. Anyway, and it helps you think. We try to, in apologetics, we try to help people think. And I don't shy away from in all my courses. I ask our students to read liberal stuff.
Sure.
And things that don't agree with our stance. We call a lot of people liberal, but I mean literally people who are just really off the charts. And because I want them to know what's out in the world, what's being taught, what's being listened to, and stuff. And then from our position, not just discredit those people, but to teach our people how to think,
yes,
and how to respond to those sorts of things.
Well, and that brings up this point, and my intention is not to offend anybody who's listening,
but the reality is that
we live in, and this now anyone can listen to this if you're listening to this podcast from our website, but the majority of people are going to hear it through radio station through WQSB. And so anyone who's listening to this through the radio lives in the buckle of the Bible Belt.
Yes.
And this is the hub of social Christianity, where there are so many people that it is generational, that they have been in a family that has followed Christ. And I can remember being, when we lived in New England, my mechanic was a great man and a strong believer, but he had never been out of New England and never been to the South. And he had in his mind, he said, "I just wish I could move down south to Alabama where everybody knows Jesus and everybody." He had in mind that we walk around holding hands, quoting scripture and singing like, Kumbaya.
That's right.
And I hated to burst his bubble. I said, "Hey, man, it's just really not like that." And I told him something that I hope is not offensive, but I mean it too. I said, "Listen, we are known as the Bible Belt, but I really believe a more accurate statement is we're the church belt."
Yeah,
because there's a lot of people that go to church that maybe don't have a strong grasp of the Bible.
Oh, I think that's very accurate.
And if we could encourage them to be able to defend, to know the truth of what they believe, one, it's going to help them live out their faith. Because our faith is not based off of, I hope so, it's based off of reason.
Yeah.
And so the book you mentioned, say it one more time that you suggested. You suggested a book.
About the Bible?
Yes.
The Bible Among the Myths.
Okay.
It's a small book, maybe 170, 80 pages, and it talks about, it goes through telling them about how the Bible fits and meets the ancient standards, how it's a book of its culture, but how it's not all that either. It's not just completely a book of its culture. It's not a book of myths. Even when you define mythology, you're talking about stories about the gods. And that's where he starts with. He says, "Is this story about the gods?" Well, yes, it in some categories, but it's way beyond that. And
yes.
So how does it fit among these ancient stories and ancient myths about these other gods of the ancient world? And so it's a great book.
So I would encourage people, if you're listening and if your major line of defense when someone asks you a critically thinking question about the scripture, if your major answer is, "Well, that's what they taught me," I would encourage you to dig deeper so
yes.
that you can see for yourself the truth of it. It will strengthen your faith. Chet does not, and I sure do not, we don't have any reservation and encourage you to dig. God's a big God. He can reveal himself
Absolutely.
To you, and you'll see the truth, and Absolutely. It will hold true and would encourage
more,
you to do
the
that.
The more I study, the more my faith is confirmed. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. Even when I'm studying things that are totally off the charts and wouldn't be considered conservative evangelical,
right.
it just confirms things for me. It just helps my faith to be stronger, because as I'm reading, I'm thinking about how I think about those things too, you know,
sure.
how I respond, and how the Bible is way more accurate than people give it credit for. And to think it's an amazing book.
Well, it is, and it's the foundation of what we're about. So with that said, let's talk about the Bible for a moment. Is there a key passage that maybe you've been preaching through lately, or something that just a narrative that stands out to you that has been really impactful in your personal time in the last number of weeks that you could just share a brief word about that might
yeah.
encourage folks?
Yeah, Chris, my life verse is Psalm 125, 1 and 2. Hmm. It says, "They that trust in the Lord shall be as Mount Zion, which cannot be removed, but abides forever. Oh. And as the mountains are around about Jerusalem, so the Lord is around about his people."
Wow.
And I had never been to, when I adopted those verses, or when the Lord just stuck them in my mind, a lot of things had been happening, and I really needed some confidence, some assurance from the Lord. And the Lord gave me those passages in some of my Bible study, and I've just quoted them over and over and over. "They that trust in the Lord shall be as Mount Zion," which is a mountain there in
yes.
Jerusalem, right? It's one of the hills in Jerusalem. It said, "They shall not fail, but they shall abide forever." People who trust in the Lord shall be strong like that, you know, be on. And then he says, "As the mountains are round about Jerusalem, the Lord's round about his people." And when you stand in the middle of Jerusalem on that little ridge down where the temple is and where the city of David is, and you look around to the south, there's mountains. To the north, there's a mountain. To the east, there's a mountain. To the west, there's a mountain.
Wow.
And the whole point is the Lord's round about his people like that. So trust in the Lord. Do what God wants you to do. Stand firm, because the Lord is with you. And if you'll stand on God's word and trust in the Lord and what he says, then you cannot be removed, but you'll abide forever. It's an amazing text to me. It's just always been comforting
That's powerful. Well, listen, 44 minutes has gone by very fast here, so I appreciate your time. And I want to encourage folks to, and again, I go back to this. A number of people have prayed that God would send a pastor to Bel Air, and then the Lord, through circumstance, leads you right back here to your home area, happy home, back down, back to, yeah. back to your area, and to see that God is still answering requests, and He's still putting people where He wants them to do what He's calling them to do for the season He's calling them to do it in.
That's right.
And so I'm thankful for that. We're so glad to have you in our area.
Yeah.
Thankful for the ministry. I would encourage you, if you're listening and you don't have a church home, listen, go check out Bel Air on Sunday at 11 a.m. They would welcome you there.
Absolutely would.
There's a place for you, and so I encourage you to do that. If someone would like to contact you, to if they have a question maybe mm-hmm. about their reasoning, they're working through some things,
right.
What I'll do is this. I'm going to, if you'll write this down, I'm going to give you a way to contact me, and I'll pass that on to Chet.
We have a Facebook presence too.
Okay.
Bel Air. We have a web page there. They can a Facebook page there.
Bel Air, is that two different words? Bel Air Baptist?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And then I have my personal Facebook page. They can reach out to me there.
So Chet Roden on Facebook. You can find him that way, and might catch a little bluegrass music on there, maybe even. I don't know, but
occasionally.
But what I would say is, you can reach out to him that way. You can also, I'm going to give you a phone number you can text a word to, and if you'll do that, it'll start a conversation with me. It's going to ask you a question, and then what I'll do, I'll pass you on to him. If you've got a question about, you're trying to figure out, you're struggling with some area of your faith that would fall in line with the idea of apologetics, or fall in line with the idea of the validity or veracity of the scripture.
Yes.
Listen, I'd like to say, hey, don't talk to me, talk to him. So that's what, I'll be happy to help, but I want to pass you on to him. So that phone number, giving you time now, is 256-322-6100. 256-322-6100. If you will text the word Jesus, J-E-S-U-S, to 256-322-6100. It's going to ask you one question. You'll respond back. Then it's going to get that information to me, and we'll connect with you. We're not going to give that number out to anybody else, but it's a way we can connect quickly and easily and at any point. So please do so, and I'll be glad to pass that along. Chet, thank you for your time to be here. I have enjoyed getting to know you, and I appreciate what you're doing, and I appreciate the fact that you're serving in a co-vocational way, and that way. So just real quickly, this is being recorded in the time of COVID-19. Are you currently teaching any classes, or are you in the middle of a break at this point?
No, we're teaching. We're, you know, online presence.
Hasn't slowed down, right?
Not a bit. I'm teaching three classes as we speak.
So I'm assuming over the years, you've taught thousands and thousands of students.
Yeah, I couldn't even begin to tell you how many. I've designed so many classes, been a face in a lot of those classes that I didn't even teach. Other professors taught my courses, and I can't tell you.
Well, you know, it's the same as pastoring. You think of all the people that you have taught or preached to or ministered to, and you think through the fact that you can look out at a room full of people in a worship center or in a classroom and think, I don't know who's connecting here.
Right.
But what's amazing is to know that all we're called to do is be truthful and to sow seeds, and God does the
That's
work.
Right.
And to know there's no way this side of heaven you'll know the impact you have had. And I would say to every person listening, the same is true for you. You do not have to have the platform of a college classroom. You do not have to have the platform of a worship center at a church in Marshall County. You have a platform, and you are influencing others. You are an mm-hmm. influencer, and I want to encourage you to realize that as you speak truth, as you sow seeds of the gospel, you may think it's falling on deaf ears. You may not think it's going anywhere, but I'm telling you, stick with it, because there's no telling this side of heaven what impact you are having on someone's life.
That's
and
true.
So thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you for being a part, and we will see you next week.
You've been listening to the radio ministry of Albertville's First Baptist Church. For more information, please call 256-878-2291 or visit www.albertvillefbc.org. We hope you will join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. right here on 105.1 WQSB.